Donald J. Herman, Winston, Virginia, August 16th, 1976. Sure, we're running. Okay. I thought, first of all, I'd ask you about the education part, which became school. When you came here in 1951, did you sense any particular interest on the part of Alvin Duke Chandler in education as a discipline? Some people have identified this, and I wonder if you found this true.
Well, I think he was interested. When I came here, there were, what is now the School of Education, consisted of five people. Dr. Oliver was, of course, department chairman then, because, of course, at that time there were no schools. Even law was a department of jurisprudence, business was a department. And there were three of us, plus, at that time, a part-time person, a woman in elementary education, who changed that I just feeling ancient when I realized that I was the group and the only one still living. Dr. Clinton and Dr. Holland both died. Unfortunately, Dr. Holland in accident, Dr. Clinton was a hard attack, and so Dr. Holland died a few years ago. So I'm the only remaining one. But it was a very, I guess you'd say, aggressive group and a very professional group, and we started to try to do some things and ran into some roadblocks along the way, but gradually. Well, of course, there has been a constant resistance. Mm-hmm. From the arts and science faculty, any such development over the years still continues. And that was the primary thing. As a matter of fact, I think some of the died in the war arts and science people would probably roll over in their figurative graves if they heard me say this, but really, they had more to do with the development of the School of Education and the School of Business, the two that I've been closest to, probably than anybody else, because at that time, William Mary wasn't large enough to require that you had separate schools. We only had 1,500 students, give or take a few. I think when I came, there were about 1,400. But they were so in their ways and so inflexible in their approach that the only way that we could get anything done was to set ourselves off on the side. And so that, in the way of both business and education, I don't know what would have happened to law. You might even be able to say the same thing about it, although it probably would have developed into a separate school anyway. But that was the only way we could do what we had to do and were mandated by the state to do. And so over the years it developed almost inevitably into a separate school. But I was the counselor education program. Developed the thing almost from scratch. And it had good, this is true, I think, of any program where you have a small staff. For example, people would get master's degrees in counseling and guidance. They'd have 30, 33 hours, and they'd probably take 21 or 24 of them from me. We used to laugh about the gospel according to St. John, because that's what they got. They got me, and I think in any program, I don't care how competent the individual may be, it's better if they have an opportunity to get a wider experience. But see, I came in 51 and I think in 55, so it wasn't very long that I was pure. I think in 55 I got my first administrative assignment, which was some person. And then I went through a period of years. It got to be a sort of a wry joke because it seemed like every time I went home for a vacation, when I came back, they'd given me another job, not instead of, in addition to. And so gradually, I got the Eden College in the extension program. And I believe that it was at the time then when they asked, well, no, wait a minute, somewhere along the line there, I also became the liaison person with the branches.
Right, remember that, yeah.
And I can't remember whether, where that came in.
Well, it's because that we've been sort of in between, wasn't it?
Because I think it was the when the blow that broke the camel's back, when they also made me director of BART. I think that was the time that they developed it into a school.
A continuing studies, a school of continuing studies. I think you're right, yeah.
Because I think I was liaison before that.
According to what I found, yes, that's right. Well, let me ask you, when you were pure education, as you say, how was it that the education department attempted to deal with, or maybe they didn't attempt to deal with, this resentment that you've spoken of and that is apparent from arts and sciences?
Well, we tried to work through there. You see, at that time, there was only one faculty.
Right.
We all met over in Washington 200. And so that anything that we wanted to accomplish, we had to do by a majority vote of that faculty. Anything we wanted to put up had to be put through the committee structure of that faculty. And it just didn't go. I'm sure they did what they thought was the best thing, but their viewpoint was a little narrow. And so, more and more, it became necessary to try to find other ways of doing it. And of course, by the time that it actually became a thing, I was spending most of my time, a good part of my time, in various kinds of administrative responsibilities. And so that I think by that time, Dr. Oliver had gone up to be president of RCI, and Dr. Holland was the dean. So he got most of the real brunt of the, by that time, I think Dr. Cleese had gone to Michigan too. So it was Dr. Holland and some of them, in terms of my tenure, the newer staff that was involved in the actual transition of that kind of thing, and switchover actually changed.
And have you found the switchover has been beneficial?
Oh.
In what way?
But of course, who knows how it might have been, you know, if it hadn't happened, but we have a much more diversified program in communities and a much broader range of things. And that gives us a freedom of action. Well, we are professionals too, and we can act as professionals too. But whether that, I think that might have been possible maybe not as likely, but possible under the old framework as well. Given, give and take and freedom of operation.
There had been an attempt to set up education and business as separate schools back in about the mid-50s, and I took it from what I read that Admiral Chandler and Dr. Oliver as well were very much behind this, but the board turned it down. Do you remember this? As to why this would have, or why you thought this occurred?
Gee, I don't know. You know, this was a developmental kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it, of course, carried on over a period of at least a decade, and maybe 15 years, I don't know exactly. But if it may have been turned down more than once,
mm-hmm.
You know, why it was turned down, they might have thought they weren't ready, they might have thought, you know, I don't know.
But this didn't hamper what you were doing, didn't? You said it just kept developing. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, it, of course, there were many heartbreaks and disappointments along that road. It took a long time. I think, and that's why I made the point that I did earlier. I think everybody, even including those of us that were trying to do it, were rather reluctant in those days to take this step, you know? We thought it would have been better with the size enrollment we had if we could have found another way to do it. But we just couldn't. And I think that probably, and I wouldn't just speak for the board and the president, but I think that probably they felt, you know, that we weren't big enough to have separate schools with 1,500 students, you know. It wasn't, shouldn't be necessary. And, well, we talked about the same things in our faculty meetings, I can remember. But, you know, there was just no other way. And it became more and more evident. And finally, one time, they said, the heck with it, and they put it in.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that just build up.
It's important to note that attitude, because this was a new development, as you say, in Leland and Mary. It had just been one faculty.
And of course, I think two were strong points in it was the attitude, which was much more accurate than it is now, which is in those days. But the image of William and Mary as this highly selective liberal arts college,
mm-hmm.
And a group, of course, that working very hard to maintain that image. And adding, if that is to be the only image, then professional schools don't necessarily fit into that image.
I was going to ask you.
And I think also a sort of a, well, there's always been, as long as I've been in there, this almost psychopathic fear that we're going to get too big.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently, you know, you get more schools, it gives a concept of bigness, whether you have any more students or not. And I think probably that might have had something to do with it. The one keep it small. And of course the high selectivity,
mm-hmm.
concept that you have a higher quality program if you can keep more people out.
I never quite agreed with it.
You mentioned one of your administrative tasks that was coordinating the branch colleges, and in interviews, people from the 60s have realized that this was something that William and Mary didn't exactly invite, was the development of the branch colleges. Now, when you became coordinator, it was just after the separation of the system called the Colleges of William and Mary. Admiral Chandler was no longer the working chancellor. He was an honorary chancellor of the colleges. He had apparently had the function of coordinating junior colleges himself. I was wondering why, when this position was created, when you got this position, why was it set up so that the directors of Christopher Newport and Richard Bland were not, say, reporting directly to the president of William Mary or to the Board of Visitors, why a liaison person, in other words?
That brings in the Maybe I can back up a little bit. One thing you asked about Admiral Chandler,
mm-hmm.
and his support of education and business and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The one driving force of Admiral Chandler, I think, now whether he was consciously following his father's footsteps or whether he had developed the same or similar philosophy, I don't know, but in any case, his primary concept of William and Mary, and I think probably he would have had the same claim, public institute, was service to the people. And I suppose you picked up somewhere along the line that it was his father who really instituted the off-campus business and got RPI and Old Dominion started, and so we won't go back into that. But Admiral Chandler Elvin had a lot of those same ideas, and that's why I think this was strong in his support of things like education and business. Not so much that he had any great love for either field, or but that these were fields for which there was a great demand from the public, and he wanted to meet those demands. And of course, that's why he also was a strong supporter of, as was his father, of course, of off-campus kinds of activities. And now, I never knew exactly how we got into this. I have heard that it was a sort of a way of fending off DPI, which was thinking about coming in. I'm not sure that that's true. I think there was some pressure on Admiral Chandler to do this. I don't know. I don't think that pressure came from the governor's office or anything like that, but from Petersburg and from Newport News and that, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. But reminiscent, one Thursday afternoon at 5:00, 5:03, I got a call from the president. Sort of had a way of calling by the time of the day. And he said, I want a capital outlay maintenance operation budget for a 2-year college of 250 students. And I said, okay. I said, I'm going to be out of town next week, and as soon as I get back, I'll start working it up for you. He says, hell, I have to make a speech Saturday morning and present all this stuff. And so in one day, I got together a budget. I remember I'd call up Dr. Guy. How much did it cost to set up the chemistry lab? You know, he'd say about so many thousand. In one day, I set up a budget. I didn't know what it was for, you know. That turned out to be the budget that Scotty Cunningham used to open Christopher Newport. We laughed about it many times afterwards. It must have been all right because he got by with it.
Yeah.
But they opened, I suppose, you know, in a little old, in the Green Pool, I think it was called, downtown Newport News, an old beat up building. And they were there for several years before they finally moved out to present Chu Lane campus, just in the building. And then a year or so later, he asked me to go to Petersburg and meet these two fellas and go out and look at this site. They were thinking about starting a two-year college over there. So I went over and met these two. Oh, I'm trying to think of it. It'll come to me in a little bit. But a fine old gentleman that really was the guardian angel almost of Richard Blank. In that new classroom building is named after him. But anyhow, no, he was the fellow that took it over, he was the first president. But we went out, and what, I don't know, have you ever been to Richard Blank?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the old building was the first classroom administration building was a dormitory primarily for a school of sort of mentally retarded, I think in those days entirely black, population. And this was a rainy day, and we drove in there, and it was rainy enough so that those people couldn't be outside doing what I suppose they would normally do, so they were all sitting on the edge of their cot, and everything is all on the outside. It wasn't well landscaped at all, and it was all kind of sand and it was mud. I have never seen such a dreary looking place, and I thought, boy, if we make anything out of that, it's going to be a miracle. I don't think I've ever seen it. That's what depressed in my life as I look at it. But that was the beginning of the original line. Quite a successful operation. And then, of course, now, trying to answer your other question, they had originally, of course, they had reported through the president. I guess we, well, wait a minute, this all happened, though, about the same time, didn't it?
Right.
For
the first couple of years, I guess they reported to Admiral Chandler.
And then
when RPI and Old Dominion, or Norfolk Division, were split off, and Admiral Chandler was no longer the active head of the system.
Because this put me in a sort of a funny position.
I was going to ask, kind of fit the position did it create for you?
Because supposedly, I was reported directly to the Board of Visitors. I remember it, there was sort of the idea at first that I should have the title, some kind of title, Chancellor or something. But then they decided to make the the head man of the whole thing, the chancellor, which is kind of backwards usually, he's the president. But anyhow, the idea was that with all of the branches, and of course we never had more than two, should report through this individual directly to the board. They had a similar kind of setup at the university, and I don't know whether that's which came first, the chicken or the egg, but they had a number of branches with this coordinator because of friend of mine. Strange that we finally wound up both being, you know, directors of institutional research at the two schools. But in any case, that was the idea, and I did. I would meet with the board and present anything that came from the branches. But that was a part-time job. And the other part of my time was spent at William & Mary, where I reported to the president. So you were in a sort of a funny position, because here you were supposed to be going directly to the board, but over here. So you know, it wasn't likely that I was going to do very much to upset the president as long as my check came from his office, you know. So it was a sort of a strange situation, but it didn't have too many problems with it.
So did you work with the president on the branch colleges? Is that the way it turned out?
Not too much.
No.
But then there was some sort of thing, and I don't know how this, I guess this developed before I even took over, that, there was supposed to be a, I guess you could say, almost supervision of the academic program by the academic people at William & Mary, and which had, I think, both good and bad results. Good in that I think it did sort of help to uphold the quality, you know. But less fortunate, I think, in fact, sometimes pretty darn unfortunate, they tried to make from those two branches Little William & Mary, you know, and they just weren't that kind of institution. You know, it had some sort of unfortunate circumstances, but I guess we made it through.
You mean they tried to make them small, selective schools as well, rather than service?
We wanted every course to be just like the course was at William & Mary, and no other courses, and it just limited them pretty drastically.
And that was the faculty here that wanted it that way.
I once read some author that was writing about the two-year colleges, and his statement was that trying to operate like that was like trying to market the front half of a Cadillac. That was sort of what we were doing. Shall I get there?
Okay. The problems of trying to make the branches into Little William & Mary.
And I think much more than Christopher Newport, and largely I think through Colonel Carson's efforts, he did manage to get in some terminal programs that for people that were interested in transferring, you know, to onto a four-year school. Of course, they were different. The whole setup was different. They had such a tremendous population potential in Newport News Hampton that Christopher Newport, they had a built-in student population down there, particularly during the 50s and 60s when there was pressure for college opportunities anyhow. While in the Petersburg-Hopewell area, that wasn't necessarily true. There wasn't that much population.
How much weight was your assigned to Scotty Cunningham's leadership at Newport? He seemed to be a rather dynamic, aggressive sort.
Well, that I found the most interesting thing in working with them, and of course I've always considered myself as sort of a student of higher education and been interested in just watching it go, you know, and how it's going to develop. But I think that both Cunningham and Carson did a heck of a job in the setting in which they found themselves. And yet they approach the thing completely differently. Scotty worked almost entirely through the power structure. He worked with the service club, mm-hmm. the country club, mm-hmm. and the city government, and that type of thing. A whole lot of socializing and that sort of thing. But he sold the power structure of the area, and they built buildings for him, they bought land for him, they did all sorts of things for him. They supported the school. I wouldn't say that the population of the area was that much behind the school. Carson, on the other hand, worked through the public schools. He worked too with the service clubs and that kind of stuff. You know, the common people's approach, and probably, although, as I say, you know, there wasn't near the structure over there, he probably had stronger support from a higher percentage of the population available than Scotty did. So that it was interesting to watch how they both operated. I don't suppose Scotty Cunningham was ever in a public school in Newport News or Hampton. He just didn't approach it from that angle. And yet both of them. And I don't know how they were selected. Well, I know a little bit about how they were selected, but if you had switched the two, I don't think either one of them would have been very very successful. It was just a fortunate choice. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen to Richard Bland. I guess nobody does because of that court thing that's hanging over his head.
Was I correct in sensing that the board was somewhat reluctant to let Christopher Newport go too far too fast? This is why you were still concerned with the branches. Did you ever get that impression?
I think there was a certain amount of concern that with the population potential in the Lower Peninsula, that there was a possibility that the tail might get the wagon to go. And so I think, I don't know that that was a general concern, but I think some people did have a little apprehension about that kind of thing. Because you see, you combine that with the fact that William and Mary didn't want to go. In fact, very definitely resisted in any idea of it. That made that even more possible, I think, than it might have otherwise. So you can say, well, nobody's going Christian Newport if they go to William Mary. I don't know whether that's true or not, but if William Mary turns them all away and they go to Christopher Newport, they're still there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. From that position that you had, how would you say that being a branch of William and Mary helped those two schools more than, say, being a branch of VTI or anybody else? Was there any status from being a branch of William & Mary that accrued to it? I think that's the way I'm
I think undoubtedly there is. whether there would have been as good to be a branch of UVA or VPI, that would be arguable, but at least in the beginning years, I think, well, even now, the name William and Mary carries a whole lot of prestige. Some of it rubs off. That they benefit from. Now, of course, there are also disadvantages that there were inhibitions that result from it, and whether enough rubs off to be worthwhile, you can get some very strong arguments started depending upon who you talk to. Even you go to a place like one of the branches, and there'll be a difference of opinion among the staff and the faculty and that of the branch as to how much good it does to be a part of the community. Whether the good more than compensates for the restrictions that are placed on them as a result. OB was a law student. Whenever we asked him about something, he'd say, well, that is a point about which reasonable men might differ. That, I think, would be true in this case as well. But particularly in their formative years, I don't think there's any question. And whether Christopher Newport, for example, needs William and Mary any longer, I understand that was one of the things that was discussed considerable length in the board and other places, and the decision was finally made to split them off of an independent board. And I imagine there was a difference of opinion at that time.
Well, how has having the branches helped William and Mary then, say, conversely? Or has it? For example, is there any great pull that News and Petersburg have in the General Assembly that can help at appropriations time or anything of that nature? Has it expanded the concept of William and Mary's service?
That really is one about which reasonable men might differ. This is a thing that has followed me all the way through my whole tenure at William and Mary. I've said on a number of occasions, and it's fairly accurate, that I've made a career out of unpopular causes at William and Mary. And so for that reason, I've been sort of in the middle of it the whole way. And, let's take a perfect example of this, is Bark.
Okay.
Bark was developed with great hopes and great expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can say that Bark was oversold by the people that started it. Maybe that's true. But the fact remains that NASA, particularly the military and the whole power structure of Newport News and Hampton, had great expectations for Bart. They never were developed. And I don't think there's any question that William and Mary is partially responsible, not entirely, but partially responsible for the fact that it didn't develop. Now, normally you would say that having Bart down there and a part of William and Mary should get great support from the members of the General Assembly, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Unfortunately, it did just the opposite. I think to a certain extent with certain people, same thing happened in connection with the branches. I wouldn't want to point fingers unless I could point them accurately, and I don't know whether there are really any places to point fingers. It was nobody's fault in particular. Mm-hmm. But I think the general result was pretty unfortunate. Some tremendous opportunities were just wasted. And now, how much that hurt William and Mary over the long, but we certainly lost a lot of support, and I don't know if that's good. Certainly isn't good. How bad it is, hardly that good. Particularly in the connection with Bart, I think more than the other two branches. Some very influential people, but very, very unhappy with the union. How much good the branches did with the union? I think in the Petersburg Hopewell area in particular, I think probably it did it quite a bit. I think there's a good force. Some of that, I'm afraid, is going to have to be balanced against what happened when they took out continuing studies, didn't they? So, I think that your attitude toward this, and I'll admit we're pretty strong by it, but I think your attitude in regard to all of that type of question depends on how important you think the reactions of the general public in the area is important to you, and any other public institutions. Some people don't seem to think it makes any difference. Some of us think it makes all the difference. Probably somewhere in the middle is the more accurate evaluation. But that sort of might be a good place to sort of break over to continuing study, which had developed with a lot of the same kinds of problems. We were trying to meet the needs of the military, and I think we did a pretty good job. But we didn't, and I make no apology for it. We didn't insist that they have 1,200 college boys and be in the upper 5% of their class in order to enroll. And so the attitude of the faculty that there was no quality and all of that sort of thing. So, again, and I don't know what I'd do if I had it to do over, but we did what we thought we needed to do to do the job. And I think if you go out now and try to get some evaluation of it, particularly off-campus for you, if you were doing some continuing studies, you'll find out that everybody loves it except the people on our own campus.
That's a point worth making, too.
Which was sort of disheartening, because the people that should have been supporting you were the only ones that were getting in trouble. what, in any case, we developed to the point where we had something over 10,000 course registrations a year. And again, very similar to what we went through back with the school education and the school business. Just couldn't get the job done because of all of the kinds of requirements that might have been fine for resident students on the campus, that just didn't work off campus. What I tried to sell, and I still think it was sound, was that if the campus people, particularly arts and sciences, but not entirely, if they would allow us to meet the need for public service, then they could do anything they wanted to with the resident people on campus, and thereby the two of us would work parallel. We wouldn't get in each other's way, and the whole program would be much stronger, and the institution would be much stronger. They wouldn't buy it. I think, well, the reason that they gave, and I suppose this is, was their idea that we were destroying the quality of the William and Mary degree. We weren't doing a thing to the Bachelor of Arts and the Bachelor of Science. We wanted no part of it. They wouldn't do anything else.